The Vatican says 250,000 people filled St. Peter's Square and surrounding streets to say farewell to Pope Francis, whose funeral is in its final hour. The homeless and world leaders equally honored guests. In a homily, the assembled guests were reminded of Francis's call to build bridges, not walls, and one just may have been built just before the funeral began. Here's Monsignor Anthony Figueiredo.
Perhaps the first miracle of Francis, I dare say, a meeting between President Trump and President Zelensky.
Seen conferring just before the funeral. CBS Vatican contributor Delia Gallagher has more on that moment and the contrast with the previous Trump-Zelensky encounter.
There's something poetic almost about this, the meeting after that one, being inside the Basilica. They are inside St. Peter's Basilica as if they've just drawn up two chairs and decided impromptu, all right, we'll sit down.
Vatican watcher John Allen.
If there is some sort of opportunity for Trump and Zelensky to make progress towards peace in Ukraine, it would be such a fitting final tribute to Francis's legacy as a sort of peace pope.
The coffin has now arrived at its final resting place, the Basilica of St. Mary Major in central Rome. Monsignor Anthony Figueiredo again.
On his way back from the hospital, he took a detour and stopped here. He wanted to thank the Virgin Mary. And Pope Francis often repeated that the three most important words in life are these: please, thank you, and I'm sorry.
Back at home, CBS News Pentagon reporter Eleanor Watson tells us about the latest controversy surrounding Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth.
Sources are telling CBS that Secretary Hegseth had a system installed inside of his office so that he could respond to and see messages on Signal. That means that there is a internet connection going from his office, which is a secure area, to his phone, which is kept outside of secure areas. Cybersecurity experts would call that a dirty line because it's not secure. Defense Department is denying that there's any dirty line. Their explanation is that Hegseth does have a system in his office that mirrors his personal phone.
And Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan scheduled to be arraigned on May 15th in the federal courthouse in Milwaukee after being arrested on suspicion of, quote, intentionally misdirecting federal agents away from an immigrant being sought by the authorities. This is CBS News.
If you're 55 and up, T-Mobile has plans built just for you. Get the savings you want on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/choice55 and start saving today.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Clothes and about a handful of students were exposed to unsafe levels of lead. As city officials continue to investigate, they're forced to do so without federal support that usually assists in crises like these. Tony Wilkin Gibbart with Midwest Environmental Advocates says Milwaukee was already facing a lead poisoning crisis.
Milwaukee has the highest rates of childhood lead poisoning of any community in the state. That problem is primarily driven by the fact that inner city Milwaukee has been historically subject to redlining, housing discrimination, and disinvestment.
Gibbart says inner city kids may be going from homes that have lead hazards to schools that have lead hazards. Poor families and children are disproportionately impacted. Lead paint was banned by the federal government in 1978, but the majority of buildings in Milwaukee were built before the ban. Wisconsin prohibits municipalities like Milwaukee from requiring rental inspections before occupancy, leading to poorly maintained units and potentially overlooked lead presence. Marty Kanarik, professor of epidemiology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, says research now shows that no amount of lead is safe for children.
It slows their growth and development. It affects their learning and behavior. It even can affect their hearing and speech, lowers their IQ, decreases their ability to sit still, to pay attention. And unfortunately, these effects can be lifelong.
For Wisconsin News Connection, I'm Judith Ruiz Branch. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
You're more news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, lots of sun and a high near 62. Slight chance of a shower late tonight, lows around 43. Showers and storms Sunday with a high near 61. More showers and storms Sunday night with a low near 53. Monday and Monday night, showers and storms, some strong. Currently 33 degrees.
Civic Media. This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Live on location, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, on location here at Governor Nelson State Park on the north shores of Lake Mendota in beautiful Dane County. It is Tuesday, April 22nd. It is Earth Day, and it is a great day to be a Wisconsinite. Hello, everybody. It is now 6 past the hour of 1 o'clock. Welcome into hour number 2 of the big program. Mr. Zommers, our producer and engineer back across the lake, actually in downtown Madison at Civic Media World Headquarters. Zommers, I'm not sure if you talked to Brittany Merlot or who at the weather department, but thank goodness the sun has come out here at Governor Nelson State Park. It is a beautiful day here for Earth Day.
Yeah, I called up Brittany and asked her to, you know, just turn up the dial a little bit and bring out the sun. She did, I think.
Well, it was a great hour. In our first hour, we appreciate Mike Ring, the park manager here at Governor Nelson State Park, Drew Howich, who is the president of the Friends Group here at Governor Nelson State Park, and also former Republican State Senator Rob Coles and former Democratic State Senator Pat Kreitlow, all for being here to celebrate in this bipartisan fashion, a part of what makes Wisconsin great. Have another second great hour on tap as well. We are joined again here at the desk by just someone who's become a friend, and I admire her. She has been a mentor because I'm just going to say this from a personal standpoint, Tia Nelson, daughter of former Wisconsin governor and U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson. But in your own right, you've been a leader as a secretary overseeing the land trust here in the state of Wisconsin. You've done a number of things philanthropically for this state and as a leader. And Tia Nelson, I appreciate you being here because whether you knew it or not, there were a lot of us in staffers in the state legislature who looked up to you in your time there and said, you know what, you could be tough and passionate without being a jerk, and you could reach across the aisle and work with people you might not always agree with to achieve something. And I think that is a lesson that so many people in politics on both sides of the aisle need to take, adhere to and learn from, because you achieved so much of your time. I just want to thank you for being that type of person.
Oh, that's really sweet of you, Todd. That's probably one of the best lessons I learned from my father when he served in the state Senate prior to being elected governor. He was a minority leader of four other Democrats. That's a body of 33 senators. So, and Melvin Layard, who later became Secretary of Defense under President Richard Nixon, was the majority leader. And, they were close friends, and they argued all the time about ideas, but they both showed up for work as dedicated public servants, and they collaborated in really critical ways to make Wisconsin a great state for all of the citizens. And so that's a really big gift that my father gave me, and God knows that I needed some of those special skills during some of those days in the legislature.
Right. No, absolutely true. Also a pleasure to be joined this hour at the desk here on location at Governor Nelson State Park by James Edward Mills, who is a freelance journalist, also a fellow of the Nelson Institute there. James, thank you very much for being here. We appreciate you and welcome to the show.
Todd, thanks a lot for having me. It is a beautiful day. Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day to you. It's marvelous to have you here. Tell us a little bit about, I know that you and Tia are going to be on campus tonight at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. For Earth Fest. Tell us a little bit of what brought you two together.
Yes, well, Tia and I have been acquainted and have been friends for a long time. I am a freelance journalist and independent media producer, and I have a focus on focusing on issues of outdoor recreation and environmental conservation with a further specialty in community engagement and social impact as it pertains to how we get more people of different walks of life into the outdoors. And the film that we're going to be screening and discussing tonight is called Planet Walker, and it is the story of Dr. John Francis, who in 1971 witnessed a catastrophic oil spill on the San Francisco Bay. He was so, inspired is perhaps the wrong word. He was appalled by this assault on the environment, so much so that he decided that he was going to no longer ride in automobiles. And after having done that for a while, he realized that he was also not making much headway in this issue by arguing about it. So he decided to take a vow of silence. And for almost 17 years, he did not utter a word or ride in an automobile.
Wow.
And as it happens, he actually walked from San Francisco to Oregon, where he got his undergraduate degree in environmental studies, then walked from Oregon to the University of Wisconsin-Madison here in Wisconsin to get his PhD in environmental studies. And he then went on to...
The only person to ever get a PhD from the University of Wisconsin without ever speaking.
Exactly. And he's not even fluent in American Sign Language. You know, so he literally defended his doctoral thesis through pantomime.
Wow.
And in the course of that, he went on to walk to Annapolis, Maryland, where he became an expert on the management of oil spills for the U.S. Navy, and then ultimately became a goodwill ambassador for the United Nations. And he broke his vow of silence in 2001 on Earth Day. His first words were, "Thanks for being here."
Wow. Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. And so John and I have actually been good friends for a little while now. He and I became acquainted. He actually gave one of the very first ever TED Talks.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's fascinating.
In fact, he was in the very first round of TED Fellows when they decided that having people talk about their life experiences would be a great way to engage audiences. And his story in particular was very compelling for not having spoken for so long.
Yeah.
But I think perhaps more than anything else, his story is really profound in that he has been able to impact the environmental movement by encouraging people to listen to one another.
Mm-hmm.
If you take the time to spend time with John, he will embarrass you by how carefully he listens to what you have to say, and not having spoken for so long is really good training for that.
Yeah.
And I think that his primary message when he engages with audiences all over the country and around the world, that it's really important that we listen to one another and we share our love and passion for the environment by listening to what other people want and need from that environment. And it's by hoping that we will ultimately treat each other a little bit better through kindness, that we can ultimately make the world a better place for everyone.
And don't we need more of that in today's world? So the film is tonight on campus, 7 o'clock. Is that
right?
It is?
Yeah.
People are still able to come and enjoy that if they want in the Madison area?
Yeah. It's registration is free.
Okay.
Just go to... I believe it is Nelson Institute. I'm not even sure what the website is. If you Google Earth Fest,
University of Wisconsin Earth Fest, it'll be there at 7 o'clock tonight. The film is about 30 minutes, and then James and I are going to be in conversation with John Francis after the film to talk to him a little bit about his experience. He's an amazing guy. It's an amazing story. And his message of kindness and listening, I think, is more important than ever today.
Yeah, it certainly is. We're speaking with James Edward Mills, a freelance journalist and a fellow of the Nelson Institute, and Tia Nelson, daughter of former Wisconsin governor and U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson, here on Earth Day. Tia, about 4 minutes left here before I have to go to break. But I know you talked a little bit about this last year, but people that might not have joined us then, we hear a lot about Earth Day in the news on this day and leading up to it. But tell us how this started with your dad and just his inception of this. And I just think it's fascinating, again, how one person could have an idea. And here we are 50 years later still celebrating.
Yeah, well, that, you know, that is, the for me, the most resonant, the coolest sort of gift of reflecting on the Earth Day history is the idea that individual action matters, that you don't always know the outcome of your actions. In my father's case, he grew up in a small town in northern Wisconsin, Polk County, the town of Clear Lake, and nature was his playground, and it deeply influenced his values and who he grew up to be. And so when he was governor, he launched the program that preceded the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund, which we were talking about in the first hour of your program. And it was wildly successful, and it made him very popular. And he was subsequently elected to the United States Senate, went to Washington, D.C., and found, you know, that not many people seemed to care. And he tried a variety of methods to persuade people to care more about the environment, clean air, clean water, land conservation, what the future relationship of the human species with the rest of the earth would look like to be more sustainable. And it just fell, from his perspective, it very much fell on deaf ears. So he flew out to an oil spill to inspect what was the largest oil spill in American history at the time, off the coast of Santa Barbara. And he was reading a magazine on the airplane on the way back from that. And it was talking about how teach-ins on college campuses changed the narrative about the morality of the Vietnam War. And he had an aha moment, which was, I'm going to call for a teach-in on the environment. He gave a speech in the fall of 1969, asking teachers to set aside a day to teach on the environment. Such a simple idea. Think of that. You know, it's just set aside a day and talk about, this is, I think, really the genius of Earth Day, you might say. He didn't prescribe what issues people should be talking about. He invited people in their communities to talk about, do, act, engage in whatever manner felt meaningful to them. And as I mentioned in the first part of your show, it was successful beyond his wildest dreams. This concept of teach-in became Earth Day. Earth Day became a recurring event. Today is the 55th anniversary, which would, you know, be really a surprise and delight to my father.
Well, I always remember the you know, because I happen to be 55, so it's just my age, so that's an easy one to remember. Yeah. Although I don't like to always remember my age, but Earth Day is fantastic. We're going to come back, talk more with Tia and James, also at the 125th anniversary of our national park system and the history there. Don't go anywhere. We are live on location at Governor Nelson State Park. It's the Town Hall Ball Show for a Tuesday, Earth Day, on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
David Hogg, Democratic National Committee Vice Chair, says, no, we're going to spend $20 million to take out fellow Democrats who are either too old or not voting progressive enough. And Republicans are doing this as well. They don't want any compromise, zero-sum game. I spent 30 years in politics. The best politics are pragmatic. You get 75% of the loaf and you move on.
Catch The Todd Allbaugh Show at its new time, weekdays 2 to 4, on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
Teachers are dynamic leaders shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. They're skilled experts, discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, leading by example. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready? Explore teaching at teach.org, supported by the U.S. Department of Education and 1 million teachers of color.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matinee on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Welcome back to the Tylo Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Sachimo, Louis Armstrong there. What a wonderful world. It is a wonderful world, a wonderful day, Earth Day 2025, the 55th anniversary thereof. We are live on location at Governor Nelson State Park on the north shores of Lake Mendota here in beautiful Dane County, the north side of Madison. So glad to have you along. Hopefully you're having a wonderful Tuesday as well. Here at the desk with us is Tia Nelson, daughter of former Wisconsin Governor and U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson, who founded Earth Day and for whom this state park is named. Also at the desk here on location, James Edward Mills, who is a freelance journalist and fellow of Nelson Institute. And guys, I have to share a shout out to my colleague and friend, Jane Matinair of Matinair on Air, because last year we were out here and I made the faux pas because it was quick and easy. I had a plastic water bottle with me. And Jane said, how can you have a plastic water bottle on? I said, I know. So she, in her kindness and her pity, bought me this wonderful Yeti reusable. And so now we've traveled all over the state together. And so thank you, Jane. I'm Earth Day proper this year, thanks to you, with my reusable Yeti. We all have proper, but I think, Tia, that's, again, you said it last segment that your dad, when he started this 55 years ago, just had this idea, hey, take one day and talk to the kids in your classrooms about Earth Day. But it's just snowballed into this awareness. And I'm not sure if I talked about this last year or not. I've had the honor and pleasure of visiting El Salvador. It's become kind of my second home from a college buddy that I've been there 39 times over 25 plus years. And what's interesting about it is there's a great beach called Costa del Sol, and it's on the Pacific Ocean. I love going there. I loved it because it was undeveloped when I first started going. It's been more construction. But anyway, walking along that beach in those years in the 90s when I was there, you saw a little bit of trash, but not a lot. The last time I was there in 2019, the amount of plastic straws and bottles and all the crap washing up onto the shores was just sad. And it makes a person like me think from Southwest Wisconsin, wow, a guy that grew up in rural Wisconsin ends up living a dream, in my opinion, realizing his dreams of being a U.S. senator and then a governor, had an idea, and he's bringing awareness and making people do each of our little part in reusable containers. And you think, well, what does that do? Well, everything together, Tia, adds up to a bigger thing.
Yeah, reducing single-use plastic is a good entry point for individual action for all of us. And even those plastic containers, probably the water bottle you had last year, congratulations on switching
to
a reusable
even
bottle.
I'm
proud that all three of us bought our own reusable bottles here. Very little of that is actually being recycled, even if you're putting it in a proper recycling container. And there are so many other individual actions, and it's easy to wonder whether they make a difference. And I would put forward the philosophy that it makes a difference for two reasons. One, cumulatively, it does have an impact on the environment, the amount of pollution you're seeing on the beach in El Salvador. But it's important that we get up in the morning and that we live our values. A part of how I, guide my life day to day. My big challenge, I'm pretty good at avoiding single-use plastic. My big challenge, and it's an interesting one, and it's one that was, has the potential to save people a lot of money, is reducing food waste. If food waste were a country, it would be the third largest source of greenhouse gas emissions in the world after the United States and China. And so, I like to garden, and I compost my food scraps. But there's something all of us can do to tread more lightly on this earth, and it matters.
Want to get to the phones. We have Dick standing by in Madison listening on WMDX 855-752-4842. If you'd like to join us with a question on Earth Day or a remembrance of Governor Nelson or of Earth Day, 855-752-4842. You could also text us on the Civic Media app. Dick in Madison. Dick, thanks for calling in. What do you have to say, Dick?
I had the pleasure of meeting your father at his book signing at Borders Books. And my daughter was in fifth grade at the time, got the book for her. And it was an interesting night because my old neighbor happened to be in line. And it turned out that his father had went to school with your dad.
Oh, nice.
The day. And I'm like, wow, this is just too strange. Art and I were both. And he also knew the origins of my daughter's name is Maura. And he knew more about it than I did. It was pretty.
Yeah, that sounds like
different.
Dad.
Yep. Great.
Thanks,
night.
Dick. I appreciate you calling in and sharing that. You know, that has to be cool for you. There's stories like this all over Wisconsin of people who knew your dad in one capacity or another. But again, the generational impact that he made.
Yes, it's quite, I feel quite fortunate. I feel very blessed, actually. He was a really good guy. He wasn't just a dedicated public servant and a strong leader and someone who accomplished a lot in the public world that's recognized. He was hysterically funny. He so kind and humble. So I'm really lucky, and to this day, people stop me and tell me some fond story or memory, either they had or maybe they heard it from their grandfather. I still get stuff in the mail. Someone's cleaning out their parents' house after their parents have passed away, and they find pictures that the parents have saved or letters or correspondence with my daddy. He was quite a letter writer, and they send them to me. It's very, very touching. I'm enormously grateful.
Yeah. Wonderful man, wonderful public servant, former governor and U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson. Coming up on a break here, give you a little tease. When we come back, James is going to give us a history lesson and something that I did not know a lot about. I think this is an undertold story, the history of Black Americans and how they helped literally build the U.S. National Park System. Talk about that. Take your phone calls as well, 855-752-4842, and your texts on the Civic Media app. We are live on location at Governor Nelson State Park on this Earth Day 2025 across the Civic Media Radio Network. Ooh,
yeah. This is 93.5 The Tap.
CBS News Special Report. The Vatican says 250,000 people filled St. Peter's Square and surrounding streets to say farewell to Pope Francis and...
Perhaps the first miracle of Francis, I dare say, a meeting between President Trump and President Zelensky.
Monsignor Anthony Figueredo, the pair were seen conferring just before the funeral. Here's Vatican watcher John Allen.
If there is some sort of opportunity for Trump and Zelensky to make progress towards peace in Ukraine, it would be such a fitting final tribute to Francis's legacy as a sort of peace pope.
The simple wooden coffin has now arrived at its final resting place, the Basilica of St. Mary Major in central Rome. Monsignor Figueredo again.
On his way back from the hospital, he took a detour and stopped here. He wanted to thank the Virgin Mary.
The 88-year-old pontiff's tomb inscribed with his name, Francis. CBS News Special Report.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Day three of the NFL draft. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports from Green Bay, where it's the final day now of the draft. Last night, the Packers adding two players on offense. Tackle Anthony Belton out of NC State and another wide receiver, Savion Williams from TCU, GM Brian Gutekunst.
Just so versatile, so many different things. I think he's one of those guys that Matt and his offensive staff, just the creativity they can use this guy in so many different ways that, you know, just we were really excited to get him. You know, again, I think we did some good for the Packers. We got a big day tomorrow, a bunch more picks, and you know, the board's looking pretty good, so we're excited about it.
Baseball, the Brewers losing to the Cardinals 3-2 in St. Louis. NBA, the Bucks beat the Pacers in Milwaukee 117-101. Bobby Portis.
This is the biggest game of the year, being down 0-2, being at home in front of our great fans, our great crowd. Want to put on a good performance and, you know, get a dub. That was the biggest thing.
That's the Bucks, Bobby Portis. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, lots of sun and a high near 62. Slight chance of a shower late tonight, lows around 43. Showers and storms Sunday with a high near 61. More showers and storms Sunday night with a low near 53. Monday and Monday night, showers and storms, some strong. Right now, it's 37.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. President Donald Trump launched a cryptocurrency meme coin with his likeness on January 17th, just before Inauguration Day. April 21st, with its value plummeting, the company offered top buyers of the coin a dinner with Trump and a personal tour of the White House. That likely violates the Emoluments Clause. The website for the meme coin loudly promotes a dinner with Trump at his Washington Golf Club for the top 220 owners of the coin, and for the top 25 owners, an exclusive reception and special VIP tour. But as of April 24th, any reference to touring the White House was scrubbed from the site. With the value having fallen from $74 to a low of $7.66 on April 17th, the price jumped after the announcement to $14.54 on April 23rd. But it's not the price of the coin that should worry Americans, but that corporations, special interests, or foreign governments could exploit the offer as an opportunity to channel money to the notoriously transactional Trump in exchange for access and favors. Jordan Leibowitz of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington told Mother Jones magazine, "This is about as unethical as you can get, essentially selling off access to the president," unquote. We have a pre-scrubbing graphic and more on the Emoluments Clause at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal. Find us on Blue Sky at Democracy Minute.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Check out my war plans.
Pete Hegseth talking about first big strike against the Houthis in Yemen on Signal, two separate channels. Yes, the one you heard about before with the reporter on it. Oops-a-daisy. And now also his wife, his bro, and his lawyer who magically got hired by the Pentagon. This guy's judgment could not be worse. Do you think Hegseth should probably resign?
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons, 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Maggie Dawn.
Tom Paulsiewicz joins me in the guest host seat. We dig into Judge Hannah Dugan's arrest. What is going on here?
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Pursuing truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to Tyler Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are on location for this Earth Day 2025, the 55th anniversary of Earth Day. We are in Governor Nelson State Park on what has turned out to be an absolutely picture-perfect day. The clouds are partying. The sun is here. Lake Mendota lapping up against the shores. There are no swimmers yet, but the beach is almost ready to go. We are live here on location with Tia Nelson. She is the daughter of former Wisconsin Governor and U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson, for whom this park is named. And also joining us at the desk on location Foundation, James Edward Mills, a freelance journalist and also a fellow of the Nelson Institute. They will be appearing on the University of Wisconsin-Madison campus tonight at 7 o'clock. You can find out more at earthfest.wisc.edu. That's earthfest.wisc.edu. Thank you, Mr. Zomers, for finding that and putting it up on the StreamYard there for people watching this on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Twix, X, whatever you want to call it. And we'll have that on the show notes as well. If you want to join us, call in, give us a call. We'd love to hear your Earth Day thoughts, remembrances of either Governor Nelson or of Earth Day proper. 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. And you can also text us on the Civic Media app. If you don't have it, it's easy enough. Go to your app store on your Apple or Android device. Type in Civic, C-I-V-I-C, Media. It'll pop up. Click on that. It'll take less than a minute to download. It is free. As we say, it's what CBS's Gayle King calls a deal. The Civic Media app, download it today. Well, she doesn't say that. She says that about the CBS Morning app, so I assume she'd say it about ours as well. That's why I say that. Guys, I appreciate you both so much being here. Tia, you joined us from Seattle last year. It's so cool to have you here in person. I know it means a lot to you, this park, but it really means a lot to me because earlier I said, as a kid that grew up with a single mom most of my life and my sister, we spent time here as kids because it was something that my mom could do for, the price of gas to get us here from Richland Center. But the park sticker, I forget what it was in the 90s. But, I mean, still, it's $28 for the year now, right? And again, your father's legacy and this park system, it is something that is accessible. It doesn't matter, but it's open to almost everyone of all social, economic, racial classes in Wisconsin. It's for all of us in Wisconsin.
Well, having access to the outdoors is part of who we are, and as Wisconsinites, over 90% of the citizens of this state live within 1 mile of a stewardship acquired property. This particular park is one of the few urban parks in the state park system. Here we are. We can see the Capitol across Lake Mendota from here. And it's a regular destination for me, and a beautiful example of prairie restoration. This is an old oak prairie ecosystem, one of my favorites. And it's right in the back door of the cities, given all kinds of opportunities, whether it's the trails or the boat launch or the beach we're sitting here by, for the picnic tables we're sitting at. So there's something for everybody. And I'm really proud of it.
And you should be. James, I want to talk a little bit about your expertise here, which is our national park system coming up at 125 years next year. We're at 124, but I'm always a little bit ahead, it seems like, except when I show up for places, I'm late. But on history, I'm trying to be ahead. So I love the Ken Burns series on our national parks. As a former Republican, one of the former Republican presidents I'm proud of is Teddy Roosevelt, who helped to establish and grow the national park system, rather. But tell us a little bit about the park's anniversary coming up writ large, 125 years. But then this is a unique story to me. The folks that built the park system, there's a whole story here of Black Americans who are integral in making sure that we have the system we have today.
Sure. So I started my career in outdoor recreation primarily as a sales representative. And very early on, I realized that there was very few people that look like me. Mm-hmm. There weren't very many African Americans, people of color, who were engaged and involved in this. And when I became a journalist in 2009, I had the honor of actually interviewing Ken Burns in advance.
Did you really? Wow. Mm-hmm.
And I'd written several stories prior to this conversation about the role of people of color in the preservation of public land. And I asked him, point blank, how are you going to tell the story of people of color and the role that we played in creating these amazing places? And in this interview, he tells me the story of 400 African-American men, members of the U.S. Cavalry called the Buffalo Soldiers, that were stationed in Yosemite and Sequoia National Parks in 1903. Now, I grew up in California. I was a rock climbing instructor and a wilderness guide in the Sierras. I'd been to Yosemite many times. In fact, my parents honeymooned in Yosemite.
Wow.
And I'm hearing this story for the very first time. You know, here I am in my late 40s. And I'm thinking that if I hadn't heard this story before, that means that probably millions of people have never heard this story either. And so I started doing a lot more digging into the history of our national parks. And when you take a look at the long arc, you know, of how it is that we, you know, got to where we are right now, you know, shortly after the American Civil War during the Reconstruction era, you have the first seven African-American members of the U.S. House of Representatives. Seven black men, primarily from the South, were part of the U.S. Congress between 1870 and 1871. And it was during this Congress that the Yellowstone Act was created that dedicated land for the, quote, for the enjoyment and benefit of the people. And seven black men had the opportunity to vote on that, you know, and from that, you know, through the expansion of the West, African-Americans were engaged in protecting and patrolling the newly designated park at Yellowstone from Fort Missoula, Montana. And it was at this time that we have the first designation of public land as a federal institution. Shortly after that, Yosemite becomes a national park. If you go on through the annals of history, you can take a look at the fact that W.E.B. Du Bois in 1920 visited Grand Canyon in the in a trip that was sponsored by the NAACP. And he said that why do not those who are hurt by the world's hardship and made to suffer in the world's wars and battles, come to these places and drown themselves in the utter joy of life. And we have this very beginning of the conversation around how we can start protecting and preserving our national parks. And in the 1930s, during the Depression, during the time of the Civilian Conservation Corps, a unit called Unit 818 of the Civilian Conservation Corps was an integrated but primarily African-American unit that built many of the trails leading down into Kaibab and the Bright Angel Trail, as well as the areas around Phantom Ranch. You know, and so when we stop and think about how it is that we have so much public land, people of color were actually engaged and involved in much of the earliest development. But sadly, it was, you know, during the administration of Woodrow Wilson, where we have the first Southern Democrat elected to the U.S. presidency since Lincoln. And he brought in much of the Jim Crow segregation in the South into the federal government. And he succeeded in segregating the U.S. Army shortly after the onset of the World War I, segregated the U.S. Postal Service, and the newly designated National Park Service in 1916.
Wow.
Okay, so the same men who had protected and patrolled Yosemite in 1903 went on to serve with the Harlem Hellfighters in World War I, couldn't come back to civilian life to become National Park Rangers. And that would be true until 1953, shortly after, well, not shortly, actually, a little bit after the end of the World War II, Eleanor Roosevelt with Mary McLeod Bethune and the Black Council under FDR and then Harry Truman desegregated our national parks. And it wasn't until 1963 that you had the active recruitment of national park rangers who are people of color. A man by the name of Bob Stanton, 83 years old today, but he was the very first national park ranger recruited to patrol the park at Grand Teton National Park, not far from Yellowstone. And he went on to become the very first superintendent of a national park since the great Captain Charles Young was the superintendent of Sequoia National Park in 1903. And then finally, in 1979, under the auspices of Bill Clinton, he became the first black director of the National Park Service. You know, and so you have this wonderful story of exploration and conservation, but also adventure. Shortly after the signing of the Civil Rights Act of 1963, Ebony Magazine profiled a climber by the name of Charles Madison Crenshaw. In 7 days after the signing of the Civil Rights Act in 1964, he became the first Black American to summit Denali National Park in Alaska. Mm-hmm. And it was then called Mount McKinley, and then it was named Denali under the aegis of Barack Obama in 2016. So we have a really long heritage that continues to this day. And I'm really happy to be able to share these stories with folks here in Wisconsin. I teach a class on much of what I shared with you at the Nelson Institute called Outdoors for All, where we have a lengthy conversation about the long historic narrative of the roles that so many people have played in natural resources that are frankly all of ours to enjoy.
We are speaking right now with James Edward Mills, and a journalist, freelance journalist, and fellow at the Nelson Institute, and Tia Nelson, daughter of former Wisconsin Governor and U.S. Senator Gaylord Nelson here on Earth Day. We were at Governor Nelson State Park. James, I'm just mesmerized listening to that history and the fact you just have it all in your head. Any historian like that, I'm envious of. But again, and not to get too deep into current day politics, but I don't know that in my lifetime those stories need to be told more than now, because we're seeing, the current administration wiping away history, particularly history of people of color in this country. And these stories need to be told over and over and over again to current generations, because I just think we're richer for it. When we realize that, I don't want to quote Joe Biden too much, but I mean, we have come up short in American history, right? We have left people behind, but you realize that this country, maybe more than any other, the melting pot and the rich history, we are better because of our differences.
Absolutely. And it's really fascinating to me because much of the history that I just shared with you, I only learned a couple of years ago.
Wow.
I didn't grow up with this. I certainly wasn't taught it in school. I don't read it in books. It's not part of our popular culture. But the evidence is all around us if we take the time to look. Mm-hmm. When we stop and think about, for example, the Lewis and Clark expedition included a enslaved man by the name of York, who, as a person of color, was able to make direct relationships with Native people. Mm-hmm. And there are many people who suggest that had it not been for him, these white guys from Virginia never would have made it out of Iowa.
I believe that.
And so it is that part of the narrative. But, when the expedition was over, York was remanded back into slavery, mm-hmm. And was not given his just due.
Wow.
Incredible. And it's really not until later in history that we have the opportunity to acknowledge the contributions that someone like him made. And it just so happens that, and I looked this up very recently, under the Clinton administration, again, York was actually posthumously given the rank of sergeant. As a military expedition, he was the one person who wasn't active military at the time, though he had many of the same responsibilities. Ironically, the same thing was actually issued to Harriet Tubman. Mm. Just last year, the Maryland National Guard posthumously gave her the rank of one-star general.
Really?
For having been the very first woman to execute a military operation in a time of war. She led the Cumbie River Raid in South Carolina, where she personally liberated 700 enslaved people.
Fascinating. We'll come back, talk more about this with James Edward Mills and Tia Nelson. Your phone calls, stay with us. We see you on the lines. We'll get to those after this. It's the Oddball Show on location, Earth Day, from Governor Nelson State Park. You're listening to Across the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. On April 22nd, in the Wisconsin State Senate, something happened that you don't see too often. A high-profile bill passed with overwhelming bipartisan support. The Republican-controlled chamber voted 32-1 to extend Medicaid coverage for new moms from 60 days to 12 months. Wisconsin is one of only two U.S. states that has not already extended this critical postpartum coverage. So with that kind of support, you'd expect the bill to pass, right? Well, Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss has repeatedly blocked this legislation from coming up for a vote. Several Republican state representatives have been speaking out on this, urging Voss to change his tune, but he has not yet budged. It's time for Voss to end this charade and allow this bill to come up for a vote. If he's opposed, he can still vote against it. But one person should not block a bill that has already been supported by the majority of his own party. Let the people vote, Mr. Speaker.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area. 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Tom Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Glad to have you along with us here live on location from Governor Nelson State Park at about 9 minutes before the hour of 2 o'clock. We are here for Earth Day. Coming up at the top of the hour, CBS or ABC News, depending upon which of our great stations across the state you're listening to. A weather update. I'll give you the weather update. It's nice. Here, at least here in the shores of Lake Mendota, the sun is out. It's turning into a beautiful day. And then our great sports reporter, Mike Clemens, talking about the draft, of course, which is underway this week on Thursday and Friday. We'll have reports from Mike and other folks as well on the draft. And then the Maggie Dawn Show every afternoon, or at least for today, from 2 until 4. And later on, Pete Schwabba and Nightlight from 6 until 8. I say that about Maggie's show because tomorrow, folks, if you haven't heard, the big switch is underway. Maggie will move from her current slot till 4 until 6. And Zomers, have we got things packed? Have we got 2 men in a truck? Are we ready to go? We're moving from our current time slot. 2 hours later, we will follow Tom Hartman every afternoon and be with you starting tomorrow at 2 o'clock from 2 until 4. Zomers, have we got the alarm set in the studio?
Wait, we're moving? No, I'm kidding. No, yeah. We're set to go.
So it's going to be Kreitlow 6 until 8 in the morning, Pat Kreitlow mornings. Then Jane Matinair and Greg Matinair on air from 9 until 11. It's going to be Hartman, Tom Hartman, 11 until 2, us 2 to 4. And then Maggie Dawn 4 until 6, followed by Pete Schwabba 6 until 8. That's the new lineup that kicks off tomorrow. Excited about that. Excited to have our guests here at Governor Nelson State Park, James Edward Mills, journalist, freelance journalist and fellow at the Nelson Institute, and Tia Nelson, daughter of the esteemed former Wisconsin governor and U.S. Senator Gaylor Nelson. I want to go right to the phone lines, 855-752-4842. Matt in Middleton, listening on WMDX. Matt, you've been patient. We appreciate it. You wanted to talk a little bit. I have a question here on Earth Day. Go ahead, Matt.
Thanks, Todd. Great show today. I was wondering how Mr. Nelson, Governor Nelson, and would have thought about Trump and the attack on the EPA wanting to drill, drill, drill. And here in Wisconsin, they want to fast track Line 5, which is dangerous for our Great Lakes and that precious resource here. How can we fight that? And what would Governor Nelson have done about that? And I'm just curious how his daughter feels about that.
Tia?
Thank you.
Well, thanks for your question, Matt, and for your interest. I, you know, want to remind your listeners, Todd, that the first, today's the 55th anniversary, the first Earth Day, April 22nd, 1970, led to the passage of more environmental laws than any other time in American history. And a Republican President Richard Nixon created the Environmental Protection Agency to protect everyone's right to breathe clean air and drink clean water. So, it doesn't take a lot to understand that the threats against the agency that is tasked with protecting all citizens' rights to a clean environment is under attack, and it's greatly disconcerting to me. It certainly would be to my father, and I think what his response would be to talk about how the issue of the environment is not a partisan issue, and how people came together to do the right thing to protect the environment for the benefit of everyone. And that, you know, I take some sense of comfort in knowing, you know, it used to be different to me. Mm-hmm. That means it can be different going forward. And I think we as citizens of this great country are called now perhaps more than ever to use our voices to express our support for environmental protections. The elected officials have to respond to those who vote for them. So, you know, it's time to use your voice.
Yeah. James, as a former Republican myself, I looked at people like, you know, Teddy Roosevelt, but President Eisenhower, even this case, as Tia said, you know, former President Nixon, a guy like Tommy Thompson, former Republican governor, who Tia has pointed out, actually put more land into public trust than even her father did. From a historical standpoint, as a journalist knows history so well, again, I think answers can be found in history. About 2 minutes left here. What's your takeaway for the future based on national parks and what we've done here, even the state of Wisconsin?
Well, I think that there's a lot to be said for protecting and preserving our public lands in general. You know, and the great thing about it is the writing's kind of on the walls at this point, because during the first Trump administration, we had a lifting of the restrictions of drilling in the Arctic. Mm-hmm. And oddly enough, market forces prevented it from becoming a national issue. It's really expensive to drill in the Arctic because we have alternative energy is bringing the price of oil down. So that ultimately, I think that if we have a combination of letting the markets speak, but also demand. And the demand for a lot of people right now is renewable resources, alternative vehicles, electrics. I mean, all the things that allow us to make physical, personal investments in environmental protection. The governments, named frankly, the legislators, need to listen to the people when they say, this is important to us. Yeah. And we will suffer the inconvenient truths of having to only have one car, perhaps, or driving shorter distances or using more fuel-efficient vehicles.
Tia Nelson, I'm going to give you 20 seconds for the last word.
Happy Earth Day.
Happy Earth Day.
But do I need to be more clever than that?
No,
you caught me by surprise. Individual action matters. Use your voice and enjoy the great outdoors in the beautiful state of Wisconsin.
That's all for this week's Best of the Todd Allbaugh Show. As always, if you want to hear the rest of the week's shows, you can go to civicmedia.us/shows or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And as Todd always says, whatever you believe in, whatever you're fighting for, do not give up. Keep banging your drum. We'll see you on Monday.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap Eau Claire, Chippewa Valley's home for the Todd Allbaugh Show.
Jay Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, he is running to head up the Wisconsin Democratic Party. Joe Zepicki joins us. Also, Will Westmoreland. His YouTube channel is The Back 40. Don't miss it.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. Reviewing the week's legal news with a friend of the court.
Well, I'm looking forward to Saturday morning. I haven't missed one. Outstanding. Just like being in school.
It has been a week in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am delighted. I am honored that you have chosen to spend some of your weekend time with me in discussion.
Amicus, a law review with Jim Santel. Saturday mornings from 9 to 11. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls. W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by T-Mobile Business Advantage.
I'm Vicki Barker in London. Pope Francis has been laid to rest after a ceremony simplified by his own decree. He gave the first American TV network interview of any pope to CBS's Nora O'Donnell about a year ago. Here's what she asked him.
When you look at the world, what gives you hope?
Todo.
Everything. You see tragedies, but you also see so many beautiful things. You see heroic mothers, heroic men, men who have hopes and dreams, women who look to the future. That gives me a lot of hope. People want to live. People forge ahead. And people are fundamentally good. We are all fundamentally good. Sometimes we are a little mischievous, sinners. But the heart is good.
Vatican Watcher John Allen.
Pope Francis was not a naive when he said that we are all fundamentally good. That did not mean that there is not evil in the world and that people don't often make utterly lamentable choices with their lives. But I think what he was trying to say is that beneath all of that, there is some core of goodness that he was trying to touch.
CBS Vatican analyst Delia Gallagher says Francis would have been pleased with the encounter inside St. Peter's Basilica just before his funeral when President Trump met briefly, cordially, with Ukraine's President Zelensky.
Francis was really about process. He was about small steps. You don't have to arrive at any final thing for him. It was about these encounters, dialogue. It was important to him that people sit down, whether it's inside a basilica or in a boardroom, that at least the goodwill effort was there.
To this worshiper from Colorado.
Pope Francis bringing people together from around the world in death, as he did in life. I think it's a beautiful thing.
Francis was buried in a plain wooden coffin in his beloved Basilica of St. Mary Major, his tomb inscribed simply Francis. CBS's Sabina Castelfranco calls that fitting, too.
Cardinal Giovanni Battista Re, who is the Dean of the College of Cardinals, 91 years old, he made it very clear that Pope Francis was a pastor. He was a pastor for the church. He did not want to be a world leader. He wanted to be a priest of the people, just like he was back when he was in Argentina. He talked about how this Pope has always been concerned for the poor, the needy, the marginalized.
This is CBS News.
If you're 55,